Our study continues in the 15th chapter of Judges. We're ready to begin at the 9th verse. We just had the story of Samson having made a great slaughter of the Philistines with the hip and thigh, whether it was the use of his hip and thigh or whether it was the wounding of them in the hip and thigh is not certain, but this was a result of them having burned his wife and father-in-law. After he made this great slaughter, then he went down and dwelt in the top of the rock Etham. And this rock Etham is thought to be somewhere in the middle of the Judean hill country, possibly about 20 miles north of Hebron. He retired there to see what the results of his actions would be. Well, we see that the Philistines didn't take this lightly at all. They're going to retaliate. So beginning with the 9th verse, then the Philistines went up and pitched in Judah and spread themselves in Lehi. So the Philistines moved into the territory of Judah now, seeking after Samson, and they pitched at this place called Lehi, which the word Lehi means jawbone. And the men of Judah said, "Why are you come up against us?" So the men of Judah were very indignant about this. "Why are you here? Why do you come against us? What have we done? We haven't done anything to wrong you. We've paid all the tribute and everything that you desired of us. You have no reason to come upon us now." And the Philistines were very plain about it all. They answered, "To bind Samson are we come up, to do to him as he hath done to us." We haven't come for you, we've come for Samson. He's the one we want. We'd rather have him than have a whole army of people. And what we've come to do is to do to him as he hath done to us. Since he had smitten them in the thigh and hip, made a great slaughter, they were going to do the same thing to him. Verse 11, "And then 3,000 men of Judah went to the top of the rock Etham and said to Samson, 'Knowest thou not that the Philistines are rulers over us? What is this that thou hast done unto us?'" So we see that these people of Judah now are really traitors to their own cause. They are not faithful people to the tribe of Judah. They are turning against the very a force that is able to deliver them from the Philistines, and God would have them to be delivered. They turn against Samson. And this happens so often in the church. Whenever the going gets a little bit rough, then we find members of the church begin to fight against themselves. They begin to destroy themselves, not uniting as they should against the common enemy, against the common foe, which are the outsiders, which are going to be those that are inspired by the devil. And consequently then, the church does itself damage. And so was the case here. These people of Judah, whether it was just the fact they didn't like being delivered by a person of another tribe like Dan, or whether it was that they were such cowards that they didn't want any kind of opposition to this Philistine force, it's hard to say. But they went up to Samson, and they want now to take Samson to deliver him to the Philistines. They want to get Samson out of the way. And he is the one force that they have that can give them deliverance from the Philistines. And so they come to him with these questions. "Do you not realize that the Philistines are ruler over us? Are they moved into our territory? And what is this that thou hast done to us?" Really, Samson hadn't done anything to them. Samson was fighting against the Philistines, the common enemy. "And he said unto them, 'As they did unto me, so have I done unto them.'" So Samson justified his actions. "I've only done to them what they've done to me. I've only retaliated because of the things they did to me." Verse 12, "And they said unto him, 'We are come down to bind thee, that we may deliver thee into the hand of the Philistines.' And Samson said unto them, 'Swear unto me that you will not fall upon me yourselves.'" Now, they had come to take Samson. They wanted to bind him. They wanted to take him and deliver him into the hand of the Philistines. This is similar to the mob that came to arrest Christ. And, of course, if it had not been the time for our Savior to have been arrested, if it had been his time to have appeared in the trial, 10 times that number would not have been able to have done the job. But because it was time, then he meekly submitted to them. And so it is with Samson. Samson does submit to these people of Judah. Had he not wanted to, he could have slain them. He could have out-fought them in various ways and escaped. But no, he submitted to them. And his one request is swearing to me that you will not fall upon me yourselves. Promise me that you'll only deliver me to the Philistines and let the Philistines do me whatever harm comes to me that it not come from you. Because I'm sure that Samson knew that the result of this was going to be that he would have another victory over these Philistines. So this is a method that he will have to gain the advantage of the Philistines. And they spake unto him, saying, No, but we will bind thee fast and deliver thee into their hand. Now, we're not going to hurt you. We're just going to tie you up so that you can't escape. And we're going to deliver you to the Philistines. We'll let the Philistines do with you whatever he's done. But surely we will not kill thee. We're not going to kill you. We're just going to deliver to the Philistines. Now they had to believe with all their heart that the Philistines would kill him. They had to believe that the Philistines were going to do him any kind of harm that they possibly could. And they bound him with two new cords and brought him up from the rock. So they tied him with new cords so that there'd be no way that he could break or escape from these. They brought him up from the rock. Verse 14, And when he came unto Lehi, that is this place where the Philistines were camped, this place that had a name that meant jawbone, the Philistines shouted against him. Now the Philistines are rejoicing. Here's the object of their hatred. Here's the very one that they want to get. He's the one that has brought them the misery that they've had up to this point. So they shout against him. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him. And the cords that were upon his arms became as flax that was burnt with fire, and his bands loosed from off his hands. So when the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, these cords just were like charred bands, and he was able to loose himself from them quite easily. And now he has the Lord's Spirit with him, and he is able then to carry out the will of God. Now he didn't have any elaborate weapon. So verse 15 says, He found a new jawbone of an ass, and put forth his hand and took it, and slew 1,000 men therewith. So by using this very unhandy type of weapon, the jawbone of an ass, he slew 1,000 men with it. Now this has to be, of course, a miraculous thing, a thing brought about by God, for one man to slay 1,000. Although we have Joshua talking about one man will slay 1,000. It has to be a miraculous thing that he could do it with such a crude, inept weapon as this. It has to be a miraculous thing that he didn't break the jawbone in the use of it, or that his hand didn't grow tired, or his arm grow tired, and he was no longer able to swing it and yield it as he should. But he slew 1,000 men therewith. So we see here another great victory brought about by God, with Samson overcoming 1,000 men. Another great victory in the story of Samson against the Philistines. Now, he was the greatest force that the people of God had for deliverance from the Philistines, and he was using this force. Yet, we find that his own countrymen have turned against him and betrayed him and turned him over to the Philistines, although this did result in a great victory for Samson. Verse 16. And Samson said, now we're going to have a little song that Samson gives about this, since there were no ones of his countrymen to rush out and greet him and sing for him like they did some of the other victorious occasions, as after they did Saul and his victory. But Samson composes and sings his own little song. Samson said, With the jawbone of an ass, heaps upon heaps, With the jaw of an ass have I slain 1,000 men. Now the same word in Hebrew, chamor, C-H-A-M-O-R, signifies both an ass and a heap. So that this is an elegant paronomasia and represents the Philistines falling as tamely as asses. And not only does he sing the song here, but he also gives a name to this place. Verse 17, And it came to pass, when he made an end of speaking, that he cast away the jawbone out of his hand and called that place Ramath-Lehi. That is the lifting up of the jawbone. And we see that Samson did not preserve the jawbone as a relic. He did not take it and use it as something he could boast about having used as a weapon, but he cast it away. So we see how little regarded relics were at that time. So this is the account of another great victory of Samson against the Philistines, and it also is an example of the oddities that had to do with the actions of Samson. In all of Samson's actions, he seems to have acted single-handedly without the use of any other men or soldiers, so that he single-handedly then acted as an army against the Philistines. Verse 18, "And he was sore athirst, and called on the Lord, and said, Thou hast given this great deliverance unto the hand of thy servant, and now shall I die for thirst, and fall into the hand of the uncircumcised?" So after Samson had gone through this great ordeal, this great physical conflict of having slain 1,000 Philistines with his jawbone, then he finds himself completely exhausted for lack of water. He was sore athirst. And it's easy to see how that if he were caught up in the emotion of the moment, that his body would put forth a lot of adrenaline and he would have the energy and the strength and the stamina to carry this through. But after it's over with, then he finds him in a place where there's not any water, and he's described here as being sore athirst. Here again, we note that he is alone. He doesn't have any of the other Israelites to help him, no one to even bring him a drink of water. And so he seems to be in rather desperate straits, and he's described here as being sore athirst. Another type of Christ is found here, for Christ on the cross said, "I thirst." Some of the scholars, like Josephus, feel that this happened to Samson because he did not give God the praise and the honor and the glory for having given him the victory over those 1,000 Philistines. Rather, he seemed to have taken the praise himself whenever he sang his song and said, "With the jawbone of an ass have I slain 1,000 men." And so as a result of that neglect of the honor and glory which should have gone to God, he is now brought to this lowly state of being in desperate need of a drink of water and not having it. So Samson does call on the Lord. He now realizes that he must have help from the Lord. There's no one else to help him, and he's in such a weak and dissipated condition himself that he's not able to help himself. So he calls on the Lord. And he said, and we're going to see here where he appealed to the Lord on two grounds. First of all, "Thou hast given this great deliverance under the hand of thy servant." So he does recognize, whether he had failed to recognize it earlier or not, he does now recognize that God is the one who gave him the deliverance. God is the one who gave him the victory, and he recognizes that he is the servant of God. "Thou hast given this great deliverance into the hand of thy servant." I'm your servant. I'm depending on you, God. I'm serving you, and I depend on you then to take care of my needs and my wants. And the second thing that he appeals to is, "And now shall I die for thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" Is all this going to be for naught, this victory that I've been given? Am I at the last going to fall into the hand of these Philistines? And they're going to go down and parade their victorious accomplishment to their God, and they're going to proclaim their prowess in the streets of Ascalon, and consequently all the glory that should go to you is going to be lost due to the fact that I'm going to die for lack of a drink of water. So that seems to be Samson's plea to God. And so, verse 19, we find where God did hear his cry, and he gave answer. "But God clave a hollow place that was in the jaw, and there came water thereout." Now, this seems to say on the surface that this jawbone that Samson had used to slay the Philistines with was used in as a place for water to come out of for Samson to get a drink. But actually, we find that earlier he had already discarded the jawbone. He'd thrown it aside. And what this probably means is that this place where Samson was had a name which meant jawbone. The name Lehi is given to this place in verse 9, and it means jawbone before Samson ever used this jawbone of the ass to slay the Philistines with. So in all probability, what happened is that the water came up from a spring that God caused to form there at this place, Lehi, which was an unnatural thing to find there. And consequently, Samson then was allowed to have plenty to drink. So there came water there out. And when he had drunk, his spirit came again, and he revived. So Samson was in a bad way for water. But when he did get the drink, his spirit came again. That is, he revived himself. He's able to resume his strength, his ability to live. His body could carry out the natural life-sustaining actions that were needed. Wherefore he called the name thereof En-Hakkore. And that name means the well of him that cried. So we see that if it is true that Samson was negligent in giving God the honor and praise in the beginning, and he proclaimed himself as having slain 1,000 men with the jawbone of an ass, that now he renames this place from the former name of Ramath-Lehi, which means the lifting up of the jawbone. He now renames it to the well of him that cried, showing that he was humbled. He did beg and plead to God for assistance, for a drink of water, and of course it was given him. The well was provided him by God. And this verse says, which is in Lehi unto this day. So the well remained there after Samson had left. It still was a constant reminder, a memorial of the fact that God had revived and given Samson a drink at that place. Verse 20 says, and he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. So this is the first true mention of Samson's judgeship. And this probably indicates that the time of Samson's being a judge began at this point. It was only after he had slain this 1,000 Philistines and demonstrated his superiority, the fact that he was a deliverer to Israel, the fact that he was going to help to overthrow the rule of the Philistines, that the people did truly accept him as a judge. Now, we don't have any details given about his period of being a judge, only that he did judge Israel, and it was for a period of 20 years. And of course, as we know, 20 years is a fairly lengthy period of time for anybody to be in this position of judge or ruler over a people. It's a sad commentary on the times since this is called the days of the Philistines. So we see how that the people of God had become so weak and decadent until the Philistines had such a superiority that it's called the days of the Philistines. When we read the history of this people, these are the days when the Philistines carried the order of the day, and consequently this is known then as the days of the Philistines. So we have the beginning of his being a judge in this chapter, and we'll have the ending of it in the next chapter. And now we're ready to begin the 16th chapter of Judges, the final chapter of the story of Samson. As we've noted before, Samson's name signifies a little son, Sol Parvus. And we've seen this sun rising very bright in his morning, shining brightly upon Israel. We've seen the great position that he had here of judge, how that he has protected this people in the time of the Philistines against the Philistines. He's acted as a cushion, as a buffer, as one who would allow them to survive even under great stress from another nation. But in this chapter, we're going to see where this sun goes behind the cloud. We saw the first involvement that Samson had with a woman of the Philistines, how that it went against him. And now we're going to see two more involvements with women of the Philistines, and each one is going to go against him. In the case of Delilah, he will lose his strength because she has betrayed him, and truly the sun does go behind a cloud and seem to shine no more. But in the very end of this chapter, we will see where the sun of Samson does shine forth in one last brilliant beam as Samson gives his all, including his life, against the enemies of God, which in this particular case are the Philistines. So we see where the life of Samson was a constant battle against the enemies of God. And in order for him to be successful, he had to remain holy and pure to God. And when he did that, then God would give him the victory. And we're going to find that we today, as children of God, as members of the body of Christ, we're in a constant battle with the enemies of God. And in order for us to be given the victory, in order for us to be able to stand and overcome the offender, we have to also remain close to God. We have to remain holy and pure. And when we leave our holiness, then we're going to not be given the victory. And just as in the case of Samson, every time we become involved with somebody of the world, like he did with these three women, these three Philistine women, then we're going to lose our advantage. We're going to have to suffer for it. We're going to be given a setback in our battle with these enemies of God. So we must learn this great lesson that we cannot compromise ourselves with alliances with the people of the world. Alliances that are going to put us into jeopardy. Alliances that are going to put us into such a position that we then cannot properly serve our God. For every time we do this, we're going to pay the consequences for it. We're going to lose some of our advantage. And even though we have been given great power and great strength, as Samson had been given, and truly we have been given this power, we've been given the spiritual ability to overcome Satan. All we have to do is to tell Satan to get behind us, and he will. But we must still remain faithful to God, or this great power will be of no benefit to us. Truly, as long as we're faithful to God, we have great spiritual strength, and we can use that strength, and it will stand us in good stead. But just as surely as we turn from God, as surely as we dilute our affections, then that strength will no longer be of any benefit to us. And we're going to see that just as in the case of Samson, we can lose our strength by flirting with the world. Well, we're going to close at that point. In our next lesson, we'll begin the 16th chapter of Judges, Lord willing. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.